702. Nola knows.
Wendy Nola, happy Thursday. How are you?
And to you, hello, Rebekile. I'm good. I'm very good. Good to be with you as always.
All right. We know that this hour gets very busy, so let's jump straight into it.
Okay. So I wanted to, well, we're going to be talking about quite short and sweet little tips about how to become a very sussed consumer, how to avoid the scams, just how to protect yourself, basically. Thought I'd get as many done in one show as possible, but just a couple of things before we get there. Last week, many listeners will remember, we spoke to a mom of two preschoolers who wrote to us for advice after the school that her children are at. They are aged 4 and 2, ordered her to stop putting crumbed chicken pieces, sometimes the Simply Chicken brand and sometimes her
yes.
own that she makes, into the children's lunch boxes. Even though the rest was supposedly fine, or well, obviously fine, fruit and vegetables and that kind of thing. The school said they're basing this on Department of Health recommendations. And if she doesn't want to take out that offensive chicken, in inverted commas, from the kids' lunch boxes, then she must leave the school, take her children out of the school. So we spoke to the Association for Dietetics in South Africa, and they said, whoa, that's a bit extreme. It's very extreme, actually. Those lunch boxes, I sent them pictures. No, absolutely fine. So didn't name the school because the mom asked us not to for yes. fear of retribution, but she's since decided to take the children out and she wants to get them safely settled into a viable oh. alternative before I approach the school, which I understand. But this is on hold for a little while. I just wanted to mention it because we did say we were going to come back with more of the details. And also one of our listeners, you'll remember, his name was John in Pretoria, said, that's actually what they're doing with that kind of really extreme limitation of what goes into the lunchbox and a sort of take it or take your children out kind of approach wasn't actually legal. So I did promise we'd come back and just want to explain why we're not. So that's definitely coming. It's definitely not off the list. We're just going to get to it a bit later than we thought. And then, Rebekile, do you want me to talk about the pork rashes?
Let's do it.
Okay.
So wait, I have to start.
You started.
Okay,
yes.
So
it's yours.
I can't remember who sent me. It might have been my sister. So there's a few people that we live sending memes and TikTok videos to one another that range from the funny to the heartfelt. So I got sent this TikTok video of a woman saying, "Food lovers, I'm coming for you." So in my mind, I'm like, is the food rotten? What is it? So when I open the video, she's saying, "I just yeah. wanted to have pork rashers." And one of them still had the pig's nipple. The nipples on the rack. Three of them had the pig's nipples on them. So initially I laughed because I thought this is so funny, but I guess we eat all parts of a pig anyways. But I also understood her feeling uncomfortable because you're like, no, man, this is like, why? So I sent it to Wendy and I was like, oh my gosh, what is happening? Why are there nipples on the pork rashers?
Yeah. Do your Wendy thing. So I said, all right. I mean, I don't eat pork and so I'm not really familiar with how these products come, but it did strike me as a little unusual, right? So I went to Food Lovers and a spokesman came back to me to say, well, firstly, this woman had said in her TikTok video, she'd said, I've never seen a pig's nipples come packaged. But now that I know a rasher is the part with a nipple on it, I'm not so sure. So we kind of disconnected from kind of the parts of animals that we eat, I think. Anyway, the answer is from Food Lovers is that the teats do naturally occur in the area of the pork belly, as you would expect, which is part of the pork that the rashers are cut from. While the presence of teats on cuts of pork belly or pork rashers do not pose a food safety risk to consumers, their presence may be off-putting to some consumers. And as such, our standard practice is to remove the teats before the pork rashers are cut. But in this instance, it appears that our standard practice was unfortunately not followed. Our national butchery head has communicated with our butchery regional management team to reinforce the practice of removing teats from pork belly and pork rashers before they are placed on sale. We've also made contact with the customer to apologize for the incident and offer her a refund or replacement. So there you have it.
So it's more of a cosmetic issue than it's a health issue.
I think a psychological one, a consumer psychology thing, because we know we're eating animals when we eat meat, but we don't want that to be too in our face. So yes. A chicken in a fried chicken takeaway portion, I mean, a feather, if we find a feather,
yes,
you know, then that'll also make for an outraged video on socials, right? Because
yes.
You know, we don't – I've thought about this. We don't want to see the bits that we can see in a live animal because that feels wrong. So we don't want to see the feather. You don't want to see – well, I don't know. Then there's
what I'd actually say, Wendy, I think what's so unique about this one, seeing a feather makes you wonder if it was cleaned properly. You know, so I think with the nipple –
I suppose there's that, yeah.
Yes, with seeing a nipple, it just feels weird because you're like, I don't expect my, you know, pork belly to come with pork breast. You know what I mean?
And yes, so if you think about it,
yes.
I mean, where else are those teats going to be? I just think that people aren't used to it. And maybe especially, I don't know, maybe there's the woman thing as well. It's like, you know, it's a little bit, So, yeah. we're just not used to seeing it. As you say, it's not that it's unclean, or it's just that don't leave it there for me to see because it makes me feel uncomfortable.
Yes. Okay, and in fairness, it did look funny and weird, and the likelihood is if you are buying from the store, you wouldn't go for the one where the nipples are showing. I mean, we also eat with our eyes first. So I think I'm glad that they acknowledged and also said, look, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's not aesthetically pleasing.
I think that's a nice summary, yes. And so I think they'll be very careful in the near future not to do that again.
Okay, so when we move on to scams and things, I know everybody's going to be flooding us with the many situations that they are struggling with. So let's jump onto the next one, Wendy.
Okay, I'm going to try and get through as many as possible because normally we sort of do one or two a week in quite a lot of detail. But I thought, let me get out a whole lot of what my inbox tells me and my investigations tell me are mistakes that a lot of people make a lot of the time. So I got an email from a chap who went on holiday to Durban with his wife. They hired a car. And this is the thing. They were told that the car was new and only has one dent on record. And so when he asked to inspect the vehicle, very good advice to do this. Just check that all the little imperfections are noted on that list and that you take photos. It's very important not to be in a hurry when this happens. But yeah, the woman said, no need. It's fine. Don't need to inspect, you know. Off you go, have a lovely holiday, which they did. And when they returned the vehicle 3 days later, this was in January, they were told it has a dent. And he said, well, we were told by the guy who was helping us that it must be, you know, the known dent. But he never looked at the list. He didn't know whether it was on the list or not, right? Off he went. A few days later, he was told they're being charged for damage to the vehicle. And they pushed back, but they got their credit card details. They just took the money out. And he says, and this is really the crux of this. I must admit, he said, I do feel a little silly that I didn't take pictures when I received the vehicle. There was no note that I signed, which should have been a flag as well. Mm. But I was distracted by a call from my son's school. So he let it go. So the lesson out of that one is never be too much of a hurry or too distracted when you're taking a car or when you're bringing it back. Because if never fall for the, no, it's fine, you know, take their word for it. No, everything verbal means nothing in a dispute. Mm. It's what's written down. So insist on seeing that list and then do your own checks. Even stand on the sill of the car, open the door, stand, have a look at the roof. There could be hail damage there. There's a lot more you could do. I mean, you can go as far as checking that there's a spare and all the rest. I mean, there's a lots of ways you can get caught, but do your own checks. Mm. And if there is some, even if it looks like a little scratch, it's like, you know, very minor, just note it down to protect yourself. So, because what happens is if whatever's on that car when it comes back, if it's not noted on the list, it's you're liable according to the company. And the same thing when you're dropping a car off, sometimes you caught traffic, you're late, you're rather miss
so
your
can
flight,
I ask
I
a
would
question
say.
What
yes
if the, was the challenge not brought up to say please show me my signature on a slip of receipt of the car and what state it was in?
No.
Because that's no. The challenge I would say. I would say, okay, cool.
I would say that as
I
well.
I would say, please show me the slip where I signed that I'm receiving the car and this is the state it's in. Because they don't have that.
Well, they don't have that. And they also, more importantly, they don't have a slip signed by him to say, this is a new dent and you being and you being held responsible for it. And so I think legally, if he pushed back, but I mean, it's a lot of time and aggravation. The money's already gone from your account. My urging today is make sure you protect yourself when you take the car and when you take it back. If you just dump and run because now you're late for your flight, you don't know what's going to happen later. And yes, you could maybe fight it. Time, effort, money already gone. So I'm just saying, you know, I always say, look at the car. Is there any problem? And I say, unless you make me sign for something now, that's it. The car is taken as in perfect condition or certainly in the condition that it was given to me. There's no new damage that wasn't here because as I say, it's very hard to fight afterwards, even though from the moment the car leaves your hands, the moment you hand back the keys, anything could happen. And why should that be on you? They have to acknowledge it before you leave it. You have to sign it. Otherwise, it's not on you. But as I say, you can fight it afterwards, but rather prevent it happening in the moment when you take the car. And when you, I get so many of these relatively, and that's why I feel really, really strongly about it. A few quick ones to go through. If you're expecting an online purchase or a parcel to be delivered to your local post office or to your door via courier, be very aware of an SMS that might come claiming to be a parcel. So the fraudsters send out these SMSs that say about your parcel, we need clarification about your address, or there's a small fee to pay or whatever, and it's normally very, very small. You think, no problem, click on the link. You assume because of the unfortunate timing that it is about the parcel you're expecting. And what they do is on that click, you give your banking details to pay the amount, and now they've got access to your credit card account. So if you read it carefully, you will see there's no detail about the company you bought from, the order number or anything like that. It's just a random. They're just hoping to catch you at the wrong time or the right time. Fraud proofing ourselves also means being hyper attentive to detail. If you get an SMS, it's like an, even if you think you're going to be getting a parcel. Number one, they're not going to ask you to pay anything. And number two, that's just vague. It has to be a scam. The people that get caught and write to me are the ones that were expecting a parcel. And that is a lot of us a lot of the time, right?
Yes.
Spoken about this.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
And I like the biggest takeout that I always have from you, Wendy, is take photos of everything.
Yes.
Even when it seems like, what's the point? Or they're so nice. Take photos. If you're moving into an Airbnb, a hotel, anything, take photos of the state of things, good or bad.
Exactly. Costs you nothing, right? Except a couple of seconds of your time.
Yeah.
Really, for the amount of trouble and money that can save you, it's really a no-brainer. Gym contracts. Okay. When you go sign up with a gym, they will inevitably try and sell you the 36-month contract. And they'll tell you it's cheaper per month. Well, if you're paying it up front for 3 years, it's not cheaper, I'm sure, by the time the interest is added, right? If you're paying every month, and it's still not cheaper if you don't go the 3 year distance. And if you're a committed gym bunny, that's fine. You know that, but even then you could fall ill, you could move, anything could happen. But what most people do, first timers or lapsed gymmers, is they've the very best of intentions, but within a few months they stop going, right? Now you want to cancel, and the longer your contract period is, the higher the cancellation period will be, because it's based on the number of remaining months, and that is very, very expensive indeed. Case in point, Louis wrote to us, his gym closed down 3 months after they sold him a 36-month contract, and many others on the whole it's cheaper line. He paid $3,500 upfront what now can he do? Well, what can you do? I mean, there could be a legal battle, but, you know, it's if the gym goes into liquidation, well, then you're not going to get out much. So please go for 12 months or whatever the shortest. You might pay a little more every month, but in the long run, trust me, in 90% of cases, that's going to actually be the cheapest option for you. So just a warning about that. Please, you know, sign the 36-month one. I don't know about you, Rilakile, but have you bought these pillar candles? I'm quite big on candles, and you light things, and then instead of like burning equally all the way down, you just get this tunnel in the middle, and then like end of candle, and you've got all this useless wax. I normally put a tea light in the middle. But yeah, I read something, and I don't know whether I'm just a stupid one, but apparently the way to get that candle to burn properly and get your money, value for money, is all about the first time you light it. So the first time you light it, you must give yourself enough time to get to burn it long enough to establish a melt pool, which is the proper size and depth. Mm-hmm. It goes right across the top of your candle, right? And if you do that right, if you get that right and only then blow it out, every time after that, it will burn like the whole camp. You know what I'm saying? The whole circumference, and you'll burn down, not just this tunnel in the middle. And waste
oh,
your candle.
I get what you mean by the tunnel in the middle. I got you. So my, I know exactly what you mean. Where now the pots on the side are not getting burnt. And
exactly.
It's just, yes. Okay. I understand you.
So I thought, I don't know, maybe the listeners are thinking, how come you only know this now and you, the rest of us always do it that way? I just thought I'd share it in case the other people like me who didn't get that. You must get the right melt pool the first time. Burn it long enough for the wax to melt evenly over the whole surface of the top. Quick one. I've had a complaint from someone who, she flew on a domestic airline out of Lanseria, and she said she sat there all alone feeling quite vulnerable for something like 4 hours because there was a delay and she never got notified. When I took it up with the airline, they said, but whoever booked and paid for the ticket for her put their cell number on, not hers. So they were sending notifications, but to the wrong number. So if someone gifts you a flat, or a company pays for you, or a travel agent, make very sure that it's your cell number that's put on there for contacting by the airline and not theirs, because you're the one that needs to know the gate numbers change, especially as they don't do these announcements in airports anymore, or that, you know, there's going to be this long delay. So maybe you don't leave home and sit in the airport for 4 hours, that kind of thing. So it's a very easy mistake to make, but it has a lot of consequences. So if you're not paying, booking and paying for your own ticket yourself, just make sure whoever is has your cell number and puts it in there. Are we got a time for another one before news?
Yes, we do.
Okay, so this one is going to have people coming for me, I know, because South Africans generally are very, very much in love with fabric softness and think they're an essential part of the whole laundry process. But according to Australia's consumer watchdog Choice and the USA's Consumer Reports, which are both very robust, independent organizations who do vast testing, they say fabric softeners are a no-go because, or a no-no, because they irritate sensitive skin. They aren't great for your washing machine either, and I've checked that with some of the manufacturers. They contribute to a gunky build-up known as scrud, which can be redeposited onto your clothes, and I certainly have had that experience. They also reduce the water absorbency of towels and fitness gear as a side effect of the softness. So the softer your towels come out, the less useful they'll actually be for drying you. The only real plus, according to Consumer Reports of the US, is they are really good at making your clothes smell like your Gogo's house or their granny's house. But it smells nice. And I think a lot of consumers have come to associate whatever brand we use that smell as meaning the clothes are now clean, which is a complete, it's just a perception, obviously. Smell, it has nothing to do with how clean your clothes are, but there is this association. So if people don't have that scent, they don't get the satisfaction of, oh, lovely fresh laundry. And the advertising of these products feeds that totally. They're always about the smell. You can picture the adverts I'm talking about, right? The little wafts of beautiful scent. But actually, they don't do a lot of good. They do some bad, and they're a waste of money. As I say, don't come at me. I'm quoting the experts here. Just something for you to think about. Alternatives, you could go with nothing. You could put a little bit of vinegar in. I'd be interested to hear from listeners about this one, actually, those that have tried something else. I said, don't knock it until you've you've actually tried doing something different.
So I got a WhatsApp that says vinegar over stay soft.
There you go. I actually put a couple of drops of essential oils, my choice of fragrance. By the time the clothes are dry, you don't smell it. But when you're dealing with the laundry, you're not getting a vinegar smell, right? You're getting actually a lovely smell. Mm. I use all sorts of interesting things like rosemary and cinnamon and whatever. And it works for me. But I'm saying we are very married to that product. We've bought the marketing, and there's this association. So it might be a hard one to give up, but I'm just sharing information. Use, don't use.
Yes, yes. So before we go to the news, let me quickly throw a question that's come through on the WhatsApp line. I hired a car in Cape Town last year. I checked it very carefully on collection and delivery. All was okay. As soon as I got back to Joburg, I got an SMS message to say that they'd found damage. I knew this was nonsense. What a battle I had to get a response from them. Endless calls, promises to investigate, but no one got back to me. After 10 days of this, I called the company and asked to speak to the CEO's PA. At last, I got action and got my deposit refunded. I was convinced it was a scam.
Wow.
I now warn all my overseas Airbnb guests to watch out for this.
Mm. And she did did their checks properly, and it still happened. And that's what I'm saying. So yeah, sometimes it still happens, and the answer there is to fight.
Yes.
And well done to that listener for actually doing that. It's usually a lot of money, so it's worth fighting for, but don't just accept it. If you know it wasn't you, they
wouldn't,
and certainly if they didn't tell her at the time, look, we found this damage, that's their responsibility, and sign for it. They cannot legally hold you responsible. But the reality is that you have to fight in many cases. So thanks for that feedback. I was going to say, if you still hadn't come right, I'd be willing to fight that on your behalf. But well done to you.
Keep fighting. There's another question that says, I had people working on our garden. They claimed to have used a certain number of fertilizer bags, but when we went through the CCTV, we realized that they lied to us. We called their workplace, but that place said that those guys don't work for them and are banned from their facility as they con residents. Police say it's a civil case, but my concern is that who's going to stop these guys from conning people, and are police right to refuse to open a case?
I don't think they are right. It's the charge would be theft by false pretenses. But if it's a loan case, the chances of that actually getting to court are very, very slim. But there would have to be a whole lot of people. I'm not sure how she was conned, whether these guys, because we've spoken about it before, the ones, I think it was on the show, they arrive with a bucky load and you know, want to just spread it around your garden. That's a definite no-no, because they're using inferior products. And also, how do you know how much they're using? They just go spread, and then they say, okay, you owe us, you know, 5,000 rand. What do? The stuff is on your garden. You can't give it back. So that's a horrible con. It sounds like these guys have gone rogue. And that the answer to that is you have to do proper checks beforehand. So if they, unfortunately, there's so many scams in particular. We have to take time and trouble and expense with our airtime and whatever and do our checks. You can't accept anything at face value. It's unfortunate. And I'm so sorry that happened. And you've got the proof. I mean, there's a small claims court, but,
That in itself is a process and a mission, because
exactly.
who are they serving to come to court? So let's pick up on more of the scams and the tips that we'll be sharing with all of you after the news. It's just after 2:30.
702. Nola Knows.
We're still with Wendy Nola on our consumer rights feature, Nola Knows. We take your calls on 011-883-0702 in the WhatsApp line, 072-702-1702. Wendy, we have got so many calls and questions on the WhatsApp line, so let's jump straight into them. Michael,
sure.
You've got, from Johannesburg, you've got something on a banking issue.
Yes, that's right. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yes.
I bank with one of South Africa's biggest banks, and they have, basically on their online banking, it is impossible to download more than 150 transactions.
Mm.
I tried, you know, we had to do our annual financial statements. We tried to get the transactions for the last year into Excel, and for love of money, we could not do it. We had to download the statements in PDF and then manually copy them across, and it was a real, real effort. Spent probably close to an hour with a call center, being, you know, talking to consultant after consultant, and they said it's actually impossible, and they only allow you to download 150 transactions into Excel. So my question is that, you know, is that appropriate, and do the consumers have rights in this regards?
And I think that's a great question, Michael. If I may ask, so this is without you having to download the entire statement each time?
Yes. So there is a history. You can go back and download statements in a history, but then you have to download it in PDF format,
which is
very difficult to work with.
Yes.
So if you want to get the statements into Excel format, the only way to do it is to download on a very regular basis, because the maximum they allow you to download is either the lesser of 3 months or 150 transactions.
All right. And I think that's a great question, Wendy.
Yes. So this is a sort of more complicated version of an issue that I investigated and spoke about with Bruce Whitfield on the Money Show just a few weeks ago, actually. Somebody was complaining that, you know, the cost of getting, he needed something like the past 15 months, as you do sometimes when there's a dispute or whatever, and he could only get 3 months free. And it cost him a lot of money and he was disputing that. And so I went to all the banks and asked them, what and how many months do people get free and what does it cost them over and above that? And my advice that I gave as a result of that exercise was exactly what our listeners just said, and that is do it for yourself every month, right? Just get into the habit, because, you know, this is a migration to digital problem, because in the old days we would get the statements like clockwork when we still had a working postal service in the post, and I would put everyone just routinely into a file, and I always had them when I needed, you know, I could photocopy, I could, whatever information I needed was there available to me. Now, not so much. So this is a technical version. He's wanting to extract certain transactions,
yes,
from the monthly statements, and technically he's saying that for a formatting reason, it's not possible. Well, I would need to speak to the bank and maybe all the other banks to find out what the situation is with them. It's just, as I say, just a more extreme version of the exercise I did a few weeks ago.
Let me
upshot is going to be, you can't compel them to do it. There's nothing legal about this. And so I would say, you know, do it for yourself. Or if it's something important, do you shop around? If there's a bank that will do it at no cost and easily, then maybe you want to switch your bank from that if it's a big, because of that, if it's a big issue for you.
Michael, there's a WhatsApp message that says there are free PDF to Excel tools. Now, I know from the person who does my numbers, they convert everything into Excel from PDF statements. Is that something you are able to do on your side, or maybe you tried and the formatting didn't work out the way you needed it to?
So the truth is I didn't try it this time because for a couple of reasons. Number one, I have tried it in the past and I found that it never does as good a job as they say it will.
Mm.
Number two, bank statements are confidential information and you're using a free tool online.
You can
come on your bank statement.
Yes,
you know,
it's
not something you really want to do.
Okay, so Wendy, you have a little bit of homework so we can find out about that. If you can't download more than 150 transactions and statements force you to do a PDF format, what are the options available? We will pick that up another time. Thank you to the person who sent a WhatsApp and agreed on confidentiality. Let's go to Yaku in Sant, and you also have a bank issue.
Hi, guys.
Yes.
So my bank issue is I had my credit card expire like it normally does, and then the bank, they ask you, do you want to pick it up from the branch? Do they courier it? I got the new card couriered, and then a week later, I had 4 transactions go off the card in a department store in the USA. Off the card, immediately stopped everything, froze the account, reported the card is stolen, and they had to issue a new card, reported it to the bank as fraud, and after 2-3 weeks got my money back. So that was fine, but my question is, how is it possible that outside actors can have access to your accounts if they just have your account number or information? Why is it that the banks are not MFA, multi-factor authenticating these outside transactions? Why is it that they wouldn't, I didn't receive any notifications that as I normally would, that these transactions had gone off. The only reason I picked it up is I went through my statements, as I do every few days, and I saw USD transactions for things that I have not obviously purchased. So there must be either some inside job at the bank, or they're doing it in a way which the banks are not picking up, because there's absolutely no security or protection against this type of thing. So I'm trying to figure out why is it that we have things like when you go overseas, you need to enable your card for overseas. But none of these things make sense when they're able to take, you know, money out of your account, USD, when they have no other information from you.
Yeah, and you'd think with a card not present a transaction, you need the CVV number on the back of the card. So how does that happen? Because you wouldn't even have known it yet before the card was sent to you. What I do know is that when there's fraud and there is no way that the cardholder could have compromised anything, you know, like, you know, given the keys to the safe to the fraudster inadvertently kind of thing. And that kind of situation, if your bank hadn't given you your money back, they would certainly have been made to do so if you took this complaint to the ombudsman. So you were always, you're always going to get that money back. But to your question, it's very disconcerting in terms of how are the fraudsters able to do it if it's not an inside job, someone actually having access to the details of the card and then, you know, sharing them with fraudsters. How is it happening? The only thing I can do, if you have the inclination to email me, is to go to that specific bank, and thank you for not naming them right now, and say, in terms of this particular case, what does your fraud division think happened here, and what are you doing to, you know, prevent it happening to others? Because the fraudsters are always ahead, right? And then the banks play catch up. So it's an interesting issue. And I wonder if, you know, some people still opt to go into a bank branch and collect their card because they don't like the idea of the middleman, the courier and whatever. But there's nothing to say if you've done that, that your, the card details wouldn't already have been compromised. So it's a tricky one, but I would like to follow it up with the bank. If you could email me the details, please.
All right. We're putting you back to our producer so that we can give you Wendy's details. Let's go to Miriam in Ferndale. Hi, Miriam.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. Mandy?
Yes, hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Go ahead. Hi. I'm not sure that this is in your job spec, please, but can you help? We've been robbed by a plumber whom we called. I called a plumber on behalf of my client. I'm an estate agent. There was a leak in the toilet. The toilet valve was damaged and the cold water tap mixer. Anyway, I want to cut a long story short. So he came to diagnose the plumber, then went out for a while and came back and said he got the parts. He's going to be replacing. Anyway, he supposedly replaced, only to find out, because I wasn't there, I couldn't wait the whole day at the property. So I was gone. Anyway, he calls me, gives me the invoice. The invoice is 1,800, which is not a problem. But at the same time, we get a message from the client to say the thing is exactly leaking where it was leaking. Both of these items, the tap and the toilet valve, and nothing has been replaced whatsoever, which is where the issue is. So we refused to pay him. And owner is in Tokyo, sent invoice to the owner. The owner said, I'm not going to pay for this because the job has not been properly done. He's threatening me. He's giving me calls every day. The WhatsApps are long WhatsApps. One, the invoice has now been sent to my company, which is so idiotic because my company, real estate company, does not own a little apartment somewhere in Ferndale. I can carry on and on and on. I sent you an email, by the way, Wendy. I don't even know that this is in your job spec, but I sent you an email anyway today, and the photos of the leaking tap, the mixer not working, and the valve in the toilet not working, which we have to pay 1,800. I'm being threatened now that invoice has been sent to my company. It is not the money, but the contract.
All right. No. Okay. So that is fraud or theft by false pretenses. If you take money for a job, you claim that you're going to replace the parts, whether it's in a toilet or a car or whatever it is, and you don't do it. This is why the Consumer Protection Act, and here's another tip. Whenever you're having a repair done, parts replaced, the CPA compels the service provider to give back to you the parts that they took out in a clean container, unless you say otherwise that you don't want it. So that should automatically be done. And whenever you get someone to work on your stuff, you must ask that question up front, because maybe they won't try that one on you if they have to produce the parts. And now the only thing I can say to you is, I mean, there are lots of avenues for recourse around this, but if you send me the email today, I was working on my prep and I haven't seen it yet. I will look for it when we come off air. And if you've put the plumber's details there, contact details, email address in particular, I will certainly send an email and say, this is this. Do you have any other proof other than the fact that the problem hasn't been fixed that those parts weren't actually replaced?
I don't know. I wasn't there. But I can go to the property. They're welcome. They can come now to the property. Exactly the old tap mixer. Nothing has been changed. It's leaking as we speak from the 5th of March to this very minute. Residents have to put buckets.
Okay, so even if he did replace the parts, but he did a bad repair, the CPA warrants all repairs for 3 months, in which case you were either due a refund or for them to come back free of charge and do the job properly. So either way, he owes you. That job needs to be done. So I'll look at the email, send an email to the guy, and hopefully that will do the trick. I hope so. But we'll chat further off air.
Thank you so much, Miriam. Put you back to our producer. Let's go to Gifinia. Gifinia. Hello?
Gifina.
Fina. Yeah. All right, Fina, okay?
Giteng, okay, ma'am.
Giteng, go ahead.
Ma'am, I had a problem here. I hired the company called Permatex. This company is repairing the wall as well as the flaking of the wall.
Can I just remind Fina and everybody who calls, if you mention company names, we have to give them a right of reply. So for continuing of this story, please don't mention their name because it then requires for us to give them an opportunity to give their side of the story. And what I try to reiterate to everybody, their side of the story might include confidential information of yours. Okay. So it's always best, please, do not name companies. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So now they were doing the repairing of the wall as well as the flaking of the wall. I've hired them in 2020. And then the cost was 30,000, but I managed to pay them 29,000. Then they did whatever that they did. They did whatever that they did in the world. But within 6 months, the very same problem that I had, it reappeared. And then I phoned them to tell them that the very same problem that you were fixing or you were repairing, it's reappearing on my wall. So they said I must shoot all the areas that had been affected and then send them the photos. I did that. And then they promised to come and fix the wall. I've been phoning them. I've been sending the photos. And then they've been promising that they will come. Up to today, I did not get any call from them. And then they did not also come and fix the wall. So I don't know. And then I reported the matter to Consumer Offices Affair in Joburg. And then they told me that they sent me email that they cannot get hold of those people. So they've dropped the case. So now I'm frustrated. I don't know what to do now. So I wonder if Wendy can help me because I've paid a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. Yeah. So the repairs are warranted for 3 months. We were way over that when the problem first appeared. It was 6 months. If the consumer affairs people were unable to contact them, I'm not rating my chances. I mean, are they still in business? Did the officials just not try hard enough? Because I can only attempt to engage if I can get hold of someone, and then it's up to them whether they want to respond to me. So I don't know. The bigger the company, the best chance I have. The little ones are just like, they don't care. They don't have a reputation to uphold. So I don't want to sound pessimistic here, but I don't rate my chances in a case like this, especially when the consumer affairs people have had no luck and closed the case. I'm so sorry. I mean, I'm willing to give it a try if you email me, but I don't want to get your hopes up. Fina, I'm really sorry.
Oh, Fina, so sorry about that. I've passed you back onto our producer. Now, Wendy, this is not a consumer-related question, but I know you know a lot of people and are very experienced, and they're asking on the SMS line, they say, I have a tenant who trashed my place. is there recourse? It's not clear if this is like an Airbnb situation or if it is a rental, long-term rental lease. But what do you know about the recourse that's available other than keeping a deposit?
Well, it would be a civil matter. I mean, it's that clear. I did have a case once, though, in Cape Town, where this person paid a very reputable agency to get him tenants for a property that was actually on part of their property, but quite a big sort of flat list. And those tenants trashed the place. And I got involved because my question was to the agency, what vetting did you do? And I went into it in quite a lot of detail. And they didn't do some basic checks, which would have revealed that this was a problem situation. They shouldn't have checked. They only checked the one guy, and the other one had a problem, but he was also living there. So they should have checked both of them.
Mm.
And I managed to get some sort of settlement for the person. So if there's a rental agent involved here and you can prove that they take a lot of money for, say, to spare you this kind of thing, to get you the right tenants, right? That's part of it. And if this person had a bad history or history of doing this and they placed them in the property, in your property anyway, then there's grounds for recourse. Other than that, you just, you know, you got to hire a lawyer and you're very much, you know, in a civil litigation situation, which can be very costly and very, and take a very long time, unfortunately.
Oh, thank you so much for that question. Here's another one. I took my car for a main service at one of the dealership's service branch. They replaced my car battery, and when I asked for the old battery, they said that they cannot give it to me. Knowing well, consumer had forced them to give me the replaced battery or replaced items, etc. That is from DK. So just to reiterate, they must give you all the old parts. I have requested for my tires. When I go and change my tires, I want my old tires back.
Good.
That we can use them for planters. You can use them for multiple things.
Yes.
But I also want proof that you actually changed the item.
Yes. So it's come through in two queries now. The thing to do is when you, yes, you've got recourse if they don't do it. But that's, you know, I'm all about prevent problem in the first place, right? So when somebody is going to take your property and they're going to replace something that's in it and they're going to do a repair, tell them before you hand over, not afterwards. I want to see those parts, please. Please prepare them. They should do it automatically, but they often don't. So ask that question. And just while we're talking about cars, there's a case that I'm dealing with that came in today, a dealership in Joburg. Car went in for its first service. Stolen. They've got video footage. It was in the wash bay and the keys were left in there. So that's negligence. It's yet another case. So when you hand your card over, ask what their security protocols are. And if you're not comfortable, make another plan or say to them, this car gets stolen, it's on you. And how will you respond? What responsibility will you take? We have to ask these questions up front, please. Saves you so much time and trouble.
Wendy Dollar, thank you so much. Back together next week.